happened? What happened?
You got shot.
What's your name?
Wake up. What's your name?
Shit.
If there ever was a time, it would be now. That's all I'm saying. If there ever was a time to get on your feet, take it to the street. Cause you're the one that's getting played right now by the game they're playing. Come on, meet me down at the Cardiff Park and say, oh, where are the youth?
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. I'm back in the United Police States of America, obviously, and I would like to send out a warm thank you to my sister, Cynthia McKinney, for filling in for me the 2 weeks that I was in Europe working with Free the Cuban Five committees in Ireland and Sweden. A lot happened while I was gone. Obama signed an executive order on March 16th that flew under the radar of the corporate media shills, but we will be talking about that on a future soapbox. But I think the biggest tragedy is that the war in Afghanistan is still going on, and innocent people, and like my guests will say, I don't like saying innocent people. Everybody in Afghanistan is innocent. The United States of America is illegally occupying their country, illegally killing Afghans, but they're literally being slaughtered while they sleep. So our guest today is a very committed, bright, and articulate young Bay Area peace activist. She's from Afghans for Peace, and she's going to talk about this recent atrocity in Afghanistan and recent events in the Bay Area. Fatima, welcome to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox.
Thank you.
And first of all, I didn't know you're pregnant, so congratulations.
Thank you.
How far along are you?
I'm 21 weeks right now. So, you know, I didn't know at first when I was in Occupy Oakland and all that police brutality stuff was going on, and you know, I didn't realize I had put myself in danger like that for my baby, but I've been more careful in what kind of protests I attend now. Shouldn't have to be that way, but, you know, we live in a police state, so.
Well, no, it absolutely shouldn't have to be that way. Have you had, like, a sonogram and everything's going okay with the baby?
Everything is perfectly normal. I had a doctor's appointment today, actually, and I'm very thankful that everything so far has been perfectly normal.
Well, good. I hope you'll keep me in, you know, the loop about this. That's something that's very exciting. So, as a grandmother, you know, I love the babies.
I'll definitely send you some photos, and maybe you'll see her if you come visit.
Yay. Okay. Well, before we get started on talking about the recent massacre in Kandahar province, which is why we brought you on, I want you to tell my listeners about what was going on in the YouTube video that you sent me today, and I will post that on my site and in the newsletter that I send out so my listeners can watch the video too. But tell me what was going on. It was on March 17th. And I think you were having at a rally to oppose the war and oppose the recent massacre. But what's the backstory on that, and what was happening?
So basically, Sunday morning, well, when we found out about the massacre in Panjwai, Kandahar, Afghans for Peace initiated a call for vigils. And our Afghans for Peace member, Mithra Qayyum, in the U.K., Afghans for Peace members, Sumaira in San Diego and Saraya in Toronto, initiated the vigils. And within 24 hours, we had 13 vigils going. Other Afghans got involved. Most of these vigils, and we've received photos and videos all over our Facebook page, have had a very clear anti-war message. I've never seen Afghans turn out in this large numbers all around the worldwide Afghan communities protesting, including massive protests inside Afghanistan. So, and even though the, you know, we've been more involved with the protests outside of Afghanistan, and even though these have been in countries, like I said, United Kingdom, Canada, and the United States, none of these vigils / protests have asked attendees to bring a British flag or an American flag or a Canadian flag.
Mm-hmm.
Fremont has about 65,000 Afghans. It's one of the largest Afghan immigrant communities in North America. And it's also one of the most assimilated ones, also one of the most in collusion with the U.S. government and military. A good number of people, I mean, I would say half at least of people, I mean, in my own family, like I meet people, I talk to people that are working as translators. They're, you know, it's very difficult for them. I mean, if you're getting paid $200,000 to $300,000 a year, you know, it's very difficult for them to be critical of the U.S. military. So there's a lot of reasons. And then on top of that, there's also state repression and being afraid, you know, of FBI repression when those Afghans or Muslims who have spoken up against this so-called war on terror. There is that element, too, of being silenced through the state. A lot of these people are, a lot of my people in my community are immigrants. Their visa statuses can be jeopardized. So there's all those elements going on. So the Fremont one was the first one to ask, the organizers were asking people to bring American flags. And several of us Afghans who really feel strongly about this issue, that this is like an insult. I mean, as the organizers claim that this is for the victims in Afghanistan, and I mean, quite frankly, if this is for the victims in Afghanistan, it's like slapping them in the face if you're going to show up with American flags. They're burning flags inside Afghanistan. You know, like, can we put our desire to prove how American we are aside for one day? Like, this is a vigil for women and children who were brutally massacred due to a racist, unjust, inhumane war. Those the dehumanization and racism has been a big part of this war. And to turn around and anyway, so we were talking to them for days trying to convince them to not bring flags. Luckily, the one Afghan guy who brought a flag had it upside down as a sentiment of protest. Mm-hmm. There was actually a lot of anti-war sentiment in the crowd, in the audience. And the only time they clapped is when people alluded to anti-war statements, anti-U.S. militarism, or people like myself who clearly, you know, went all the way and said it, you know. But there was a lot of muzzling going on, a lot of control going on by the organizers, self-proclaimed leaders of the community. And what really upset me is that they were saying this event is not political, yet the only female speaker they had came and made it about a voting campaign and registering to vote. And she said something like, you know, Obama's done, I know people think the political system is broken, but Obama's done some good things, and I just couldn't help, and I yelled, I was like, what? You know?
What?
So she said Obama's done some good things, and I was like, what? You know? Like,
exactly.
I was like, I just couldn't believe that this protest against U.S. war and militarism and imperialism and all that stuff, like, was being co-opted and turned into this, like, register people to vote. Come on, give me a break. Yeah. That's why I had to go up there and say, you voted him in. That's your president. You know, so what else are you going to do? And, of course, as you saw at the end, the men circle around me like a bunch of thugs. And the one guy who snatched the mic out of my hand had been calling me all kinds of names. I mean, when we were talking to the organizers, we were very polite, very respectful the whole time, but they have called us anti-American fanatics. They've called us all kinds of, you know, just like language you'd expect to hear from Glenn Beck on Fox News, not from Afghans in America protesting. They wouldn't even call it a protest. But it's interesting, though, because the mainstream media made it more sound, because we took Iraq Fighters Against War with us, we took World Can Wait and all these other anti-war elements. The media actually portrayed it as a protest, which is what it really was, and anti-war. So it's just funny to me that these, you know, organizers were trying to, like, make it, you know, a pro-American rally when it has nothing to do with that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's going on.
And they did take the mic from your, right out of your hands when you were telling people that you, in a previous protest, I think it was the previous Monday, you shut down the Obama for President headquarters. You were saying that there's going to be a protest at the military recruitment center. And the guy said, you can see by the images, this isn't what this rally is about. What images was he talking about?
He said that, as you can see, this is not what this event is about. And that was what they were trying to drive the whole time while organizing, that it's about the Afghan victims and it's not a political event. And like I said, if it's not a political event, why are you talking about registering to vote and then you mention positive things about Obama? Absolutely is a political statement when you say that. So Monday, like I said, Sunday we had all the organizing for the vigils. And by Monday we had last minute, you know, all the cities. The Oakland one was awesome. We had 100 people. We had Afghans show up, as well as a number of non-Afghans, because not a lot of Afghans in Oakland. And it was a brilliant idea by my comrade and fellow activist, who's an Occupy Oakland organizer as well, Haroon. And he suggested, hey, in front of the Obama office. And, you know, we didn't really, like, plan to shut it down. But once we got there, people were angry, you know. They were having, like, a volunteer meeting. And ladies from Code Pink were there, and they went inside and they shut it down. They threatened to call the cops on us. They threatened to, you know, arrest us and all that stuff, but it was completely peaceful and nonviolent, and we believe in peaceful, nonviolent, direct action, and I stated that in the speech. The organizers tried accusing me of promoting violence afterwards, which is really putting me in a dangerous position, considering where we're at today. So there's a lot of stuff like that going on. Like, I clearly said peaceful, nonviolent, direct action. I think that, you know, it's not unusual to go in front of a recruiting office and do the same thing. And a lot of times they don't even show up when they know you're coming. So,
we're
not advocating violence. What is violent is when you physically stop a pregnant Afghan woman, physically stop her from telling the truth. That is violence. When you collude with the state, that is violence. When your relatives are going as military translator, that's violence. When the U.S. is massacring civilians, that is violence. And then they're turning around and calling us violent.
Exactly. Well, we've had Spajmai Aksir from Afghans for Peace on the show before, but remind my listeners about your group, Afghans for Peace.
Afghans for Peace is an Afghan-led peace movement. We do have non-Afghan members now, but we are Afghan-led. And in fact, the group came into existence after, was it November of 2008, around that time when Obama announced that he's going to pull out the troops from Iraq and send 30,000 more troops to Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. After that, that's how young Afghans who had been seeing what's going on and who actually voted for Obama were really upset, and they're like, you know what, we're not going to accept this anymore, and that's how Afghans for Peace came into existence. And by the way, Spojmai just had her baby. She just had her first baby. That's why we weren't able to reach her.
Send the greetings from and congratulations from the soapbox for sure. But I was in Sweden when the massacre happened in Kandahar province, and the name of the town is
Panjwai.
Yes.
Yes.
And I was in Ireland on the 16th of March, where I protested with many people from Afghanistan, and I actually told them about Afghans for Peace, so I hope they're going to reach out to you, because there's about 2,000 or 3,000 Afghan refugees in Ireland, so I hope that they do reach out to you, because I think it's a really important voice in the movement. But all of these people that we protested with, and then we had a meeting afterwards, they all told me that it was not a single soldier that carried out the massacre in Panjwai.
Yes.
And I think it's significant. I think it's really significant, because if they can just pin it on this one scapegoat, they can say, oh, he's just crazy. But if it was multiple soldiers, you have to talk about the policy and the empire being crazy. So, you know, they said that they've heard media from...
Right,
they've heard media from Afghanistan and Pakistan about this. They've also hear the people from the village being interviewed in their own language. Of course, it's not logical that only one person can do that. So tell us about your understanding about what happened that night.
So our understanding is, Sarah did a great job from Afghans for Peace to immediately, like, collecting all the news articles that came out. And the first one, I think, was a Reuters one, and it clearly stated the witnesses were saying there was more than one soldier. And then after that, the reports kind of try to, like, almost, like, not mention that fact. But there's been multiple reports coming out from Panjwai News in Afghanistan. Some of the parliamentarians there, they had their own investigation. But here's the thing that I would like to point out, too. This is not an isolated incident.
Right.
I don't care. I don't care if it was one soldier or 20 of them. We are looking at 10 years of this. We're looking at a system of dehumanization and murder and war and imperialism and militarism. I mean, you don't have to look very far. Just look at how the U.S. military treats other soldiers. Okay? You have, what, like 5,000 a year suicides in the military right now? You have a really high rate of rape. You have, I mean, it's like, how do you expect an institution that's based on violence and misogyny and homophobia to go and bring freedom and democracy to other people? You know, we sat with IVW for 2 hours the night before the Fremont vigil, and it was mainly focused on soldiers and PTSD, and there was two women there. And just the way the U.S. military treats American female soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
How do you expect them to liberate Afghan women when they are absolutely misogynist towards females in the military? I mean, and especially this base that these soldiers, these stories are coming out of, the JBLM base in Washington. Coffee House did a really great article on it, and there's a lot of Irish, actually mainstream media has been covering it too. I mean, the kill team came out of there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this guy came out of there. That one officer that waterboarded his own daughter. You know, spousal abuse. You know, shooting at the park ranger guy that got shot by a soldier. I mean, so it's like there's an institution here that's creating violence, that's teaching people violence. And then these people come back, you know, and then they come back and they become our police officers.
Right.
There's a program that Obama put out. And then you look at the Occupy movement. I look at Occupy Oakland, and I look at the level of terror they unleashed on us. I mean, I documented the entire first raid of the Occupy Oakland camp, and I kept thinking to myself, this is like a night raid in Afghanistan, except they're not using real bullets. They're not using real bullets. That's the only difference. But they came in with that military, brutal approach. The local police is using military, they're investing in and using military-grade weapons. It's like a low-intensity warfare on American civilians here. And, you know, and then you have, so it's like, to me, it's like, this is bigger than this one incident. This has to do with a system, institutionalized system of violence, extreme violence. And, you know, you don't have to look very far. Just in the last few months, you have the kill team, you have the Quran burning, you have the urinating on our dead bodies.
Right.
You know, from the beginning of this war, we've been hearing incident after incident after incident. And it's just like, you get a certain point, you're like, this is what it's based on. This is exactly what it's based on.
What did you think, you know, and that's been my point all along, too. You know, I can't even call people innocent Afghans because... Everybody
in Afghanistan is innocent. Right.
You know, everybody there is innocent. Yeah, what's your issue with that?
I really have an issue with that, because then you're just saying, well, there are Afghans who aren't innocent and they deserve to be killed in this manner. Well, who
right.
decide that? Where was there, first of all, the United States can be the judge of other what happens outside its borders, okay? Second, was there a court? Was there like a legal process that you're going to determine who's a criminal?
Right.
I mean, seriously,
right.
like who gets to decide who deserves to be brutally massacred? To me, I just say Afghans. I don't even say civilians. I say Afghans because I don't care.
Right.
If it's the worst criminal Taliban, you can't just blow them and their family up like that. You have to like go through some kind of court system and prove that they've committed the crimes before you, you know, whatever punishment people decide. I'm just saying, like, to me, it's just another way to dehumanize and to justify murder.
Well, yeah, that's exactly how I feel. So I'm glad that you expanded on that. But what was your reaction to Obama's statement saying that that incident did not reflect the exceptional character of the U.S. military or the deep respect that the United States has for the people of Afghanistan?
I mean, okay. First of all, I just find it really ridiculous that you have a leader here in this continent and, you know, indigenous occupied land or whatever, America, and then you have this puppet in Afghanistan and they're apologizing to each other, right?
Mm-hmm.
And neither of them can really speak for the people of either region. Okay?
Right.
So they're irrelevant to me. I don't really care to watch Obama's speeches or any American president's speeches. I just don't even want to subject myself to that kind of torture, okay?
Uh-huh.
But to me, it's just like, it's a total, I mean, he has to do damage control, right? But everybody knows it's a total pile of crap, right? Like, of course it's policy of the military. If, like I said, if the military is doing it to its own soldiers, then how is it not doing it to the civilians in other countries that they're trained to hate and be racist towards and kill? So, I mean, Obama's, one of the things that's been coming out of these vigils is that even Afghans who aren't necessarily anti-U.S. military presence are saying no more apologies, apologies don't get us far. Even the Fremont Vigil made a list of all the apologies, and, you know, even though they're not criticizing the war or not asking for a U.S. withdrawal, military withdrawal, that even that group of people have come to a point where, like, these apologies don't mean anything.
They're just not cutting it, that's for sure. Well, we only have about five more minutes or so, but in the video we already talked about that vigil on, you know, on Saturday the 17th. You said it was up to Americans to rise up and end the wars, and I agree, but with many people
coming... I said Afghans, rise up.
I thought you also said people who were born here.
Yeah, but...
Did you mean Afghans who were born here?
Yes. I really take an issue with the word Afghan-American. They might as well call me an Afghan... They might as well call us an Afghan settler colonialist, okay?
Uh-huh.
Like, I really don't identify as American. My place of birth and my national... Like, my state-issued national identity does not make me who I am.
Right.
Right. But there are a lot of Afghans who have, you know, wrapped themselves in the American flag, and they're like, we are proud African-Americans. I don't buy into that ideology.
Well, obviously, even there at that rally, the people were succumbing to the two-party illusion and not holding Obama accountable. So what do you think that everybody can do? I think it's really a problem for everybody.
Absolutely. And the way what we're asking for as Afghan people is, like, we're rising up. We need our non-Afghan allies to stand with us. And they have been, right? Like, people who are themselves American or people in America, whatever you believe in, that's besides the point. But people in America are actually, yes, they are standing up. I hear more willingness of condemnation, a willingness to condemn and this war and this whole war and the military from quote-unquote Americans than I hear from Afghan Americans. Like, I mean, like I said, 10 people from Iraq Veterans Against the War went with us. You know, like, there was a big presence of quote-unquote Americans, you know, willing to, like, say something and stand up. So I agree that the issue of U.S. imperialism, war, and hegemony is not just an Afghan issue. It's a worldwide, global issue. But we also have to take into consideration that the movements of resistance are coming from communities that are most affected, people of color, Muslims, Arabs, immigrants, Native Americans, African Americans, and that we need our, you know, like, our non-people of color allies to back, stand with us, like, do ally work, you know, like, stand with us, support our voices, because we have a lot more to lose when we speak out, you know? So even at the next action, we've asked for that, and the response has been good. Like, people want to support our voices and stand with us as allies, you know?
Well, I think your voice is really important. Your voices are really important in this. But is there something that you would like to add that we haven't talked about yet?
I think that people need to, like, the dialogue in the mainstream media has, you know, shifted to soldier PTSD and you know, all that stuff, which I think is a real issue. But I think that people need to kind of think about Afghans' mental health, okay? When we were hearing the worst atrocities being committed by the Taliban, you know, when they were shooting that poor woman in the burqa in the stadium, I didn't once hear anybody say, well, these people could have some serious mental issues and PTSD, having grown up their entire lives in war and brutality and violence. So that's something to think about. I can tell you right now that at least more than half, probably maybe 90% of Afghans, that even in America, have PTSD and mental issues. Something's not talked about. I myself have PTSD, okay? The night that this happened, I was having one of my weekly nightmares that they're coming to attack us and kill us, and I'm trying to protect my family. Okay, so it's really interesting to me that these soldiers have only been there a few years and everybody talks about their mental health. Think about us for a minute, okay? 30-plus years, we've all had family members that have died and been killed and witnessed the deaths of our family members. So think about that for a minute when we call Afghan people incapable of, like, not fighting, or, like, they're savages. Just think about what we've seen and what we've been through and factor that in when you think about Afghanistan.
And also, when I was in Sweden, I spoke with a doctor from Iraq and about what's going on in Iraq. And the other day, Obama proclaimed March 19th as something honor day, Iraq honor day for the soldiers who fought in Iraq. And it should be really horror day, you know, as far as I'm concerned, because just dozens of people were killed there yesterday and hundreds were wounded, and that's just even less talked about anymore. So we also have to keep the people of Iraq in our forefront of our talking about their mental health too, that it's been a freaking disaster over there.
think about Palestine, okay, since 1948.
Yeah.
Like, again, if they're going to focus on the victimization of soldiers and how war has affected them, I ask the American people to please put your feet in our shoes for a day.
Uh-huh.
I mean, our entire lives and several generations have gone through this. So
that's so important.
Yeah.
That's so important. The people in the United States are really, really bad about that. But it's really important to put our feet in the shoes of the victims, as you say. So, Fatima, thank you so much for taking the time to be on our show today. And do you have a website? Well, I know you have a website. Can you tell my listeners your website?
Yes, afghansforpeace.org. And our Facebook page gets hit up a lot, too, facebook.com/afghansforpeace. And Afghans for Peace is AFGHANSFORPEACE. So, you know, join our Facebook page, hit us up. Support Afghan voices of resistance. It's critical now.
It's absolutely critical. Thank you so much again for being on the show, and keep us posted about your activities and your newest arrival, the next generation of revolutionaries is coming up.
Thank you. Hey, we're mothers and we're carrying our babies, and you know, that's the only way to do it. If you're going to have a revolution, you have to include the families too, you know?
Oh, absolutely. My grandkids will be there with your baby.
Awesome. Thank you, Cindy. It's always great hearing from you.
Okay, you too, Fatima. Thank you.
What happened?
You got shot. What's your name?
Wake up. What's your name?
Shit.
If there ever was a time, it
would be now. That's the soapbox for today. I hope you learned something, and I hope you were inspired. I know I did, and I was. As always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Scott Cuddy, my webmaster, Rich Bowser, my producer, Mikey. I'd like to thank Fatima for her important work and for being our guest today. And big thanks and love to you for listening and supporting the show. I'm Cindy Sheehan, and you've been listening to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Not peace out, but peace up. It's time to go. It's time to get back out in the streets. We'll talk to you next week.
If there ever was a time to get downtown again, right now, it's the party park. And News Corp says you don't have a plan. Well, sit down, man. I'll tell you again. The plan's to stand together up to green. And a tear gas can in a veteran's face won't change the case.